All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order. You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game.
This is the ZabeCast, hosted by a Pop-Tart-loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight, and let's go.
Here we go! Thursday, April 30th, 2026. Thank you for downloading. Get your licks in on April, because here comes May. Not just one of the most glorious weather months in the DMV when springtime is in full bloom and it gets warm, sometimes hot, but the trees are fully leafed out and the flowers have bloomed. It's a great month. The pollen is going to be bad as it is all spring, but May is so good. And then, of course, when it comes to sports, it's a crackerjack month. To be sure, as the playoffs in both the NHL and the NBA focus into the second and third rounds, you got the Kentucky Derby, you now have a major golf tournament in the month of May, get the NBA lottery if you're into that kind of thing. We'll talk to Kevin Sheehan about the lottery and the new anti-tanking system in just a little bit here. But yes, May is going to be fantastic. Before we get to Kevin Sheehan on today's pod, it looks like the end is nigh for the LIV Golf League. This has been sort of a slow burn for the last week and a half. When the first guy to report that, hey, this whole league is about to collapse, this whole tour is about to collapse, a guy who runs a Twitter account called Monday Q reported it. Ryan French is his name, and people attacked him. Some of them said, oh, come on. And, you know, they're like, where are you getting this information from? And then the LIV CEO, Scott O'Neill, put on a brave face and said, we're full throttle ahead for this year. And then, you know, we're going to work on turning the corner and working on planning for next year. Well, today, the Wall Street Journal, pretty reputable outlet, has it on pretty good authority that Thursday, today, the day you're listening to this podcast, they will actually tell the players and the people inside the LIV Tour, hey, Sugar Daddy is out. The PIF, the Saudi Investment Fund, is out. So if you want to have a bake sale for purses, if you want to play for funsies and perhaps a gift card or two to Chipotle, you can still play this tour. I mean, you can keep all the signage and whatnot, but we're not going to pay for any of it. We're already $7-9 billion, or as I like to say, $8,000 million in the red on this. So we're out. What's going to be fascinating is now seeing the race to the exits and seeing how quickly, I have a hard time believing the rest of the schedule happens as it's currently laid out. We'll see who's got deposits on what events. Many players are going to look to scramble to play somewhere else. And those who are the most high-profile former tour players, namely two of them, that's John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau, they're going to have a very specific and difficult problem on their hands. They didn't take the deal to come back like Brooks Koepka did. And so, therefore, their path back could be a bit more complicated. Brian Rolapp, the tour's new CEO, PGA Tour, that is, said, "I don't necessarily have scar tissue," meaning about the players who left because he was not with the tour at the time, he was with the NFL, "but there are plenty of people around our tour who do," he said. "It has to be accounted for in some shape or form." Oh boy. Patrick Reed is a slightly different situation. He didn't violate his tour membership. He resigned ahead of time. He also did not participate in the lawsuit against the PGA Tour, so he's in a better spot as he fights his way back. He's going to have his tour card next year, playing on the DP World Tour over in Europe, plus some majors. Others, though, writes the Wall Street Journal, might not be afforded a nice summer in Europe before returning stateside unscathed. The normal pathways to rejoin the tour were available to Reed because he resigned. Players who flaunted their contracts might well face additional punishments. And as the Wall Street Journal reports, and the hill to get back on tour could be even steeper for golfers with less illustrious track records. The tour already drew a line in the sand when previous returning member program was strictly limited to recent major champions. Said Rolapp, quote, "We're interested in having the best players who can help our tour. Not every player can do that." Oh, that. Oh, man. That line hits hard. Right there. We shall see. Another league that basically made a run at an established entity and has come up very, very short, to say the least. Okay, enough dumb golf talk, which I'm sure some of you are saying, oh, really? Save it for the Capital Golf Gang. By the way, great episode this week of the Capital Golf Gang presented by Golfdom. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to that for you golf nerds, and you'll get all the boys and me talking about everything in the world of golf and then some. Get it wherever your podcasts come from. The best I can say. Search for it. The Capital Golf Gang. Let's connect with my man, Kevin Sheehan of the Kevin Sheehan Podcast. It has been a minute, but we got a lot to catch up on. Been a while since I caught up with my boy, Kevin Sheehan, but he is here right now in the Zabecast. Kevin, top of the top to you, my friend. They went and did it. Fucking went and did it. They made the tournament 76 teams. Great.
I thought you were about to give me some, like, breaking news. Like, no, they went and did it. They signed Brandon Ayuk.
Well, that'll be the next thing.
I was like, what did I miss?
That will be the next thing. By the way, let's get a quick micro opinion. Does Kevin Sheehan want Brandon Ayuk on the Commanders?
If he checks out, you know, if Adam Peters knows that he's mentally stable, physically healthy, and you can get him on a one-year, primarily incentive-laden deal, absolutely. He was great. He was great in 2023. He was elite.
So, in other words...
But I'm not taking a big risk with his contract.
In other words, if it costs nothing, and if they're going to give him a one-year look-see incentive-laden deal, then essentially you are in Peters you trust. You will trust Adam Peters.
Yeah, I mean, he knows the player. Jaden knows the player. They're going to have, you know, hopefully as much information as they can possibly have. I mean, it'd be nice to be able to sit down with the young man to see if he is mentally... with it, because this, you know, Zabe, this was unprecedented what he did. I mean, he walked from an easy $30 to $40 million. They voided it, and he's not even fighting it. The Players Association's not even picking up the fight for him.
Well, so we can't, because he's hard to get a hold of right now.
Well, there is that. Yeah, but he was clearly in the wrong. you know, in not complying with whatever he was. It was like he had to show up at the facility once or twice a month for them to look at his knee. That was it.
Yeah, no, I ain't doing that, man. Okay, well, then we're going to take your bonus. Shit.
At what age does he look back on the 30 to 40 million and say, oh, my God, what did I do?
Shit. I was never going to get that money anyway. He's probably gonna never regret it. He'll make up in his mind some rationale as to
maybe
they did me wrong. It wasn't my fault. Anyway, let's get to the outrage of focus here, which is the NCAA tournament, something I know you love every bit as I do, every bit as much as I do, probably more. Now 76 teams. Great.
Yeah, I don't love it. I don't love it. To me, it's, you know.
But do you hate it?
No, I don't hate it, because I know when we get to next March and on Tuesday night and Wednesday night, there are six games, you know, three in the early night window, three more in the late window on the two nights. They can't mess with the perfect Thursday, Friday first round. Like, they're going to be 12 games and 24 teams in those first two nights.
Right.
You got to make all those games at night. You can't, you know, you can't ask people to go four straight days, because it's too much. That Thursday and Friday are sacred for that first round in the afternoon.
They were sacred, but now you've got this AI slop fest on Tuesday and Wednesday. Like you said, they have so many games there. Okay, I agree that it'd be better to put them all at night. Something tells me
that's all I'm saying.
Okay, so how would that work logistically? You've got six games at night on Tuesday and on Wednesday?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, the only way to have a perfect 64 on Thursday with 76 is for 24 teams to play on Tuesday and Wednesday, so 12 games, because then you get 12 winners to add it to 52 is 64. So 12 games is six each day, I think six each night, and you always have those two night windows. You know, the first games will start at 6:40, 7, and 7:15. Yeah.
What are your windows? I want to know. What are your preferred windows for these six games?
That's what I'm saying. It would be Tuesday night and Wednesday night. You would have two windows each night.
What are the windows? 6 p.m. What are the tip times? Give me the tip.
So, like, the first window would be 6:40, 7, and 7:15. And then the second window is 9, you know, 55, 10:10, and 10:25. Just like Thursday and Friday night go. But you'd have that on Tuesday and Wednesday with three games instead of four in a window, because you'd have, three games in each window, six total.
All right. Question number two. Is your pool going to mandate picking those games?
No. No, you're going to have that matchup of, you know, the six seed versus the 11 seed play-in winner, you know, whoever that is. You can't expand the bracket to 76 and force everybody to have it in by Tuesday.
Well, okay. 6:30. All right. So I'm working through it logically. I feel you on that. It means that there'll be a tight window of about, I don't know, 1 a.m. on Wednesday night into 10 a.m. on Thursday morning to get your pool sheet in. Because
there is now
Wednesday night that we know what the actual field of 64 is.
Well, but that's what it is now. It's just you're waiting on more outcomes.
Well, that's the thing. We're waiting on more outcomes. But, that's going to suck. Question number two, will this help the mid-majors, hurt the mid-majors, or do nothing, basically?
Say that again. You were breaking up.
Will it help the mid-majors, hurt the mid-majors, or do basically nothing?
I mean, we're going to end up with more major conference teams from the bottom of those conferences. And that's what I don't like about this, because as a college basketball fan of one team, Maryland, at the end of an 18-15 season, where you're, you know, 9-11 in the Big Ten and you lost your first round Big Ten tournament team, I guess I'll be excited that they're in, but the season's already a disappointment. Like, Indiana this year, I think, lost six of their final seven to play their way out of the main draw. They would be in the draw with 76. Did their fans really want to see that team anymore? I don't love that part of it. You're going to get a lot of mediocrity into the field, and it's going to come primarily from the major conferences, I would suspect.
Question number three, does this kill the NIT?
I mean, there are 313 Division I college basketball teams. So that leaves
more slop, in other words.
Yeah, that leaves another 237 that they can pick from, but it'll be slop. But who's paid attention to the NIT in recent years anyway? Not me.
Degenerates, basically. You don't bet the NIT? Yeah. I thought you must have.
I have, yes. It's been something I've actually dabbled in once or 10 times.
Yeah, okay. How does this affect the CBI? Or how does it affect the TBT?
Is the CBI even around? I don't think the CBI is even around anymore.
One of them died. I think one of the tertiary tournaments died this past year. I have no idea. I guess I'll take it hard as a traditionalist, and I'm going to now hold my breath for how they're going to fuck it up next, because look, it's already been disfigured to the point of 76 teams. So the next argument will be, what's one more weekend into April? That's what they're going to say. You know,
Zabe, it's the biggest moneymaker in college sports, this tournament.
The only moneymaker, because they don't run the football tournament.
Exactly.
Not there.
100%. So they'll eventually expand it again. Yeah, so
for them. That's all they got in terms of making money.
You know, I remember our good friend Gary Williams once saying and once believing, let everybody in. I mean, I remember that. And I'm like, but then what's the point of the regular season? You know, now the regular season has been rendered somewhat, there's not a lot of interest in the college basketball regular season outside of the hardcore fans of the best teams, because the NFL just masks it, you know, through the Super Bowl and into free agency. It's a 1 month out of the year sport for the most part.
I still think college basketball regular season, whether it matters or not with the tournament, has a more homey, warm-hearted feel. You're going to want to watch your favorite team or favorite teams because of the atmosphere of the old gyms and how loud the students are and all that stuff. You'll still tune in for that. You understand that it doesn't necessarily mean anything come March, but unlike the NBA, which is just literally a money collection exercise for the first 82 games, college hoops is a bit different.
I agree with that. The pageantry of some of those old venues and some of the it's fun to watch, you know, Cameron Indoor on a really good night. It's great to, you know, see a game at Kansas on a big Monday in a big game. I agree. I enjoy that still.
I'm also excited for Lenardi's first 12 in, last 12 out. That's going to be electric factor right there. You mentioned Kansas. Did you see what this kid, Tyran Stokes, got promised of rev share money?
How much?
$7.5 million for this kid, the number one recruit in the men's basketball world. Going to Kansas, one and done, I'm sure, like DeBansta. And I don't even know if it's only $7 million. It's like $7 million of the rev share. He may get some extra shit on top of that in terms of true NIL. Damn.
Yeah, right. That's part of the rev share, the $20.5 million of the salary cap. The NIL's on top of that.
He's right. So he's taken up a huge chunk of that. I hope that your beloved Terps have got their money people in place, because it's getting expensive to compete now.
Well, Buzz has gone out and had himself a hell of a, you know, last few weeks.
Yeah.
And we're waiting on, you know, a reclassed Obina Akizi Jr. Do you remember Obina Akizi's father?
I remember that guy. Yes. Yeah. He got his kid?
Yeah. His kid is the number one player in next year's class. He's reclassing to 26, and it's down to Maryland, BYU, and Arkansas, I believe. The information was supposed to come maybe today. And okay. Buzz has had a great portal. They've already got a top five recruiting class coming in for incoming freshmen. It's more important, Zabe, that you get the portal right. You need grown men in this sport. But Obina Akizi's son is 7 feet and apparently a real difference maker.
Yeah. Let's talk casino for a second. MyBookie.ag has a full Las Vegas-style casino right on your phone. Blackjack, roulette, craps, slots, video poker, all of it. No flight, no parking, no guy next to you who hasn't showered since Thursday. And they have live dealer games. Real humans on camera dealing cards and spinning wheels in real time. You can watch the shuffle. It's not some random number generator. It's an actual person running an actual table, and you're sitting at it from your couch. New players get $25 in casino credit automatically with promo code ZABE, just for making a deposit. Free money to try it on them. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state.
All right. Have you enjoyed the NBA playoffs so far? I have. They have been a wild and unpredictable ride. A lot of injuries, but there's some curious things happening, including Detroit is on the ropes. The Knicks are in a knockdown drag out. The Celtics are now suddenly in a bit of a fight with Embiid healthy again and going off the other night. And then, of course, you know, the emergence of Wemby, the freak, has been entertaining as hell.
I'm into it. I'm always into it. I know there have been some nights like last night where you get a bunch of lopsided games, although Philly's comeback was pretty compelling to watch in Boston. My favorite series by far is Denver-Minnesota. And I think it's an interesting conversation about Jokic, Zabe. I don't know if you've talked about this on any of your shows, but, you know, he won the title in 23. He's regarded already as one of the greatest players in the history of the game, certainly a top five-ish kind of center. And yet he's got one title and hasn't even been back to the Western Conference Finals since winning that title. And they are on the verge of being ousted in the first round by an Anthony Edwards-less Minnesota Timberwolves team. I think his legacy takes a hit if they don't win this series. He's got to win the next two and get out of this series. You can't lose to Minnesota now that Anthony Edwards and DiVincenzo aren't playing. And that series is old school, you know, physical, chippy. It's a rivalry. I know most people don't realize Denver, Minnesota is an NBA rivalry right now.
And it is.
And it's been fun to watch. I'm rooting for Denver to win tomorrow night. That game tomorrow night is huge for them. And I think for Jokic, you can't end up in this league with one ring and claim to be one of the greatest ever. It's the sport of how many rings do you have?
I think Jokic is much better as a Tuesday to Wednesday back-to-back middle of the season guy over the 82-game grind, accumulating outrageous stats, triple-doubling left and right. Not saying he's not a great player, but the playoffs are different. So when he got Gobert poking him in the ribs for 48 minutes a night and just harassing the shit out of him, I think it's harder for Jokic to really assert himself as a dominant player. So he's a great player, not as good in the postseason, it doesn't look like.
That's an interesting take. I mean, there's no doubt you learn more about these teams and players this time of year. It's a totally different game in the postseason. But he's played incredibly good basketball in the postseason. This has been his first rough patch of his entire postseason career. You know, this particular series, and Gobert's definitely given him a problem.
Well, there's certain players that are great players, and in the playoffs, you're like, okay, they're great, but you can do some things against them. The knock against Brunson is he's just too short. And Becky Hammond made that point on the set of, I forget which TV show she was on, as the longtime Spurs assistant. She's like, yeah, he's not a superstar. He's too small. People are like, you can't say that. And I think there's a lot of merit to it. Of course, the other night he went off for 39. He's a great player, no question. But there are asterisks, I think, at times.
Well, Iverson was small, too. I think the problem with Brunson is the same thing that I have take issue with when I'm watching James Harden. They're so ball dominant. They dribble the life out of the ball. They are incredibly skilled and talented scorers. But when the game slows down and it gets more physical and you've got to include more than one or two people in an offensive set, I never bet the teams that are ISO teams to win the title. Doncic was the closest to get there a few years ago with Dallas, but they didn't win it. I think New York is way too much ISO to advance far. I like the teams that play with more than two players on offense and sometimes more than one. I think James Harden is the most joyless player in sports to watch, personally. And I'm so rooting against him.
Totally. A zero use for Harden. Like, you can have him all day, every day. He does nothing for me. And I acknowledge that he is objectively a great player. I just don't care for him.
Brunson has some of that in him. I mean, I think it's more fun to watch Brunson score because he is smaller and he really can create space amazingly at that size. But he just on nights dribbles the absolute life out of the basketball, and you're down to 3 seconds and, you know, he can make shots. It's just not my favorite kind of basketball to watch.
So I'm hoping, as you are, for someday the Wizards not sucking like rotten eggs, and hopefully with the trajectory they're on and the lottery coming up, that they're going to get those pieces. But part of me worries, what if they become like the Pistons, good enough to be the one seed, but just be not quite right to actually do anything in the playoffs? Like, the Pistons could be out as the one seed, which is shocking to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's no guarantees that what they've done is going to pay off in a title contender at any point. But I do think it was the only way to give them a chance.
Right.
And they do have some good young players. They don't have the transcendent superstar on their team. Maybe they get that in June with whatever pick they have. I do like Will Riley a lot. Like, I think he's got a chance to be a great, great player. But you're right. I mean, it's got to come together. And here's the bottom line, Zabe. You have to have a top five player, a debatable top five player to win titles.
In the league? Top five in the league.
It's been since 2004, the Pistons of 04, where you haven't had a debatable top five player end up on the winning title team. It's a sport where you've got to have a true elite level superstar to win it.
Yeah, I was trying to think.
They've got to find that.
Yeah, Pistons in 04 were definitely a starless team.
Yeah, that was the last one.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess we'll worry about that. I'm already zooming past the point of the Wizards not stinking and just making the playoffs, which I should take that first. Let's worry about that first, then we'll worry about playoff success. All right, I did something today, which I don't know, you'll probably get a kick out of it. I tried to sit down and really understand the new anti-tanking rules for the lottery next year.
Yeah.
Have you done this? And do you feel
I did it on the show, and it's not easy. But it's this 3-2-1, three lottery balls, two lottery balls, and one lottery ball. And essentially, the best way to explain it in terms of what they're trying to do is to penalize the teams that finish in the bottom three.
Correct.
Yeah. So that if you finish in the bottom three, you have you're in a group of seven teams that have a lesser chance than seven teams that get three lottery balls. You only get two.
Right. But here's what has not been properly explained to me by any article I've read. And that is the current lottery system for one more year involves 14 ping pong balls for the 14 teams. However, they're drawn as a four number sequence. So in other words, you've got a spreadsheet. What you have is every team in the back room is a spreadsheet of winning lottery codes, and they draw four balls. So it might be 7-9-2-11. Okay, you have 7-9-2-11. Oh, Orlando Magic, we win, and they claim their pick. This new 3-2-1 sounds like they're doing a single draw, one ball and it counts type of lottery, because they're saying if you finish in the bottom three, you'll only have two balls, not three. Do you understand my question? Is this, we're changing the way we're doing it.
Yes.
There's not going to be a sheet.
I'm not sure that you're right about that, but it makes sense based on the explanation of 3-2-1 that it is going to be literally the teams that get three lottery balls get three lottery balls with their names on it.
Right.
And so they spin it and pops out.
Right, you'll have a big pot of ping pong balls, and every team that's in the middle of the non-playoff teams will have the full three-ball chance, And then those at the bottom will only have two, and we'll mix them up and we'll suck
them up. No, there's two teams that'll have one lottery ball.
Oh, that's right. The two teams that almost made it out of the play-in.
The 7 and 8 seed game losers. Those are the two with the one lottery ball. I didn't get that far.
And the play-in tournament's going to be the same? Because that's also complicated.
That stays the same.
I don't know. Personally, I would have said just do a straight lottery. Say if you're not in the playoffs, guess what? You get one ping pong ball, and we put them all in a hopper, and we do it televised live on TV. It should be a TV show. Or I said a giant Plinko board. There's a game show right now on TV that has a giant 30-foot Plinko board and a single disc. And obviously the slots in the middle of the Plinko board have a better chance, right?
Right.
Of the Plinko thing fall in there. So in other words, you weight the lottery teams by having the slots correspond with
that
the team.
That would be better television.
Fuck yeah, it would. You're like, oh, yeah, go to the right.
Right.
But
be awesome.
All right. May 10th is the lottery, so adjust your calendars accordingly. It's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon as well. I think that's a Sunday, May 10th. Oh.
I mean, that's must watch, just, you know, like the NFL draft.
If the weather is good, Kevin, I do not want you playing golf during the lottery, okay?
Oh, I will be playing golf during the lottery, and I'll follow it on my phone. Thank you.
Okay. You had a wonderful tribute to Monty Coleman, one of the great Redskins of all time, passed away at 68 years young. Old number 51 was just a smooth-running, tackling machine, one of the greats in our favorite team's history that many outside of D.C. I'm sure probably never even knew about. Give me your quick synopsis of what Monty Coleman was to you as a player.
Well, when I saw the news that he passed away, I was texting back and forth with CJ, and I'm like, the funny thing about Monty Coleman is there's not a moment, there's not a game that stands out.
Or a play.
Tommy told me on my podcast yesterday, Tommy, you know, wrote that book about the Redskins that is available, by the way, for everybody on Amazon for about $1.50.
Tom Lavera, by the way, columnist, longtime columnist in D.C., Washington Times. Yeah. He appears on Kevin's podcast, the Kevin Sheehan podcast, on a regular basis. Tommy
twice a week. Yep. Yeah. Tommy said when he interviewed Monty Coleman for his book, Monty Coleman told him something off the record that Tommy didn't include in his book, but he shared it with me yesterday and shared it with everybody for the first time, if you were paying attention, that Monty Coleman was bitter about his time in Washington, not because he, you know, didn't like people or didn't like the market, because he was such a Swiss Army knife and was used that way. He never was sort of pigeonholed into one position where he could make Pro Bowls and make all pro teams with his incredible talent, because he was really talented. But Richie Pettibone played him as a pass rusher, played him in coverage, played him as a sixth DB when they went dime coverage against the run and shoot. And he never really had like a dominant year. Add to that, he didn't start every game. He wasn't a penciled-in starter for every game of every season. And Tommy said that he had some bitterness about how that impacted his career and his opportunity to, you know, build up awards that would have made his legacy stand out a little bit more than it does now.
Well, he did not really have any public profile once he retired. And that's fine. Not everybody goes into the media, but if you're not going to be in the media, you kind of disappear from the landscape. Yep. So I had really not heard of or from Monty Coleman in a long time. It is too bad that he was a bit, you know, embittered by it. He had a hell of a fucking career. I do remember the summer in which they finally had to cut him, and it was a big deal. Like, shit. 16 years later, the Turk finally came for Monty Coleman.
Yeah. Yeah, he was really a gifted athlete. Remember, they tried him on reverses, on kickoff returns. Yes. I mean, he was the gunner on special teams as a linebacker. He was a really good player. Richie Pettibone loved him. I mean, really thought that he was incredibly underrated. And I think that's maybe his legacy, is that unless you really followed those Skins teams with him on it, he's not somebody that comes to mind right away, but he was really a good player, and players knew it.
Yeah, The Camelot years, as I call them, of the Redskins were circa 1982 through 1991, 92, 93. And of those teams that won three Super Bowls, most of the lights are still on. And I don't like to think, as a 58-year-old man myself, Kevin, about the lights going out, which they inevitably do for all of our sporting stars, because I'm looking, Joey T, Riggo, Art, Gary Clark, Daryl, Dexter, Mosley, Jacoby, Grimm, Bostic, all the lights are on right now. Thank God for these teams that we loved, but that will not be forever.
It won't be, but hopefully we're not talking about anything more this decade. I mean, Monty was sick and was sick for a while and really battled, you know, over the last several years. I as you were saying that, I'm like, Sonny's not part of, you know, that era, the Gibbs era.
I didn't mean to say Sonny. I meant somebody else. Or maybe you misheard.
No. I'm just saying I thought of Sonny as a player that recently passed away. But
the lights of the previous Redskin generation.
Understood. Of course.
Those lights have mostly gone out, right?
You know, Mel Kaufman, Rich Mallott. There are some players that have passed from those teams.
Okay, but, yeah, I know. But, I mean, the principles.
I know, the stars.
Yep,
agreed.
Time is undefeated. Okay, I want to end on this today, and that is I got into a topic today on the show about your favorite weird social media video obsession of something that is not sexual, not dirty, not.
Oh, distinct. I got it.
Last night I'm on TikTok and I came upon stump grinding, these industrial machines that have these drills.
Okay, yeah.
Find a huge stump after somebody cuts down a tree. And anyone who's ever cut down a tree knows what a pain in the ass a stump is. What are you going to do with it? You got to get a professional grinder in there. But these machines take care of these stumps literally in 30 seconds. They just drill it and grind it into nothing. And then because the algorithm said, oh, you like stump shredding videos?
Did you get next?
We got stump pluckers. There's a machine, Kevin, that has like your thumb and an index finger, and it goes down and it plucks like the finger of God, a stump, rips it out of the ground with the earth heaving. It's got all the roots still attached to the stump like a spider, and it shakes the stump so all the dirt falls out, and it just flicks the stump away. I'm like, I can't stop watching these. What is your?
I'm going right to that when we hang up. I'm trying to think. There is one that I'm into that's kind of gross. I'll just mention what they are. They're called tonsil stones. You can look them up. It's a gross thing, but there are so many videos and people that are into the removal of tonsil stones. But I thought when you started to talk about this, recipes, there are a lot of recipes that I will watch, you know, somebody put something together and make it in a minute and a half. Okay. But the thing that I've become addicted to, I don't know if you're hip to it yet, is Trackstar. The YouTube guy that interviews music stars and plays songs, and they try to get the songs in the band. Oh my, he's a great host. He started this thing on his own, and now he's got major stars, music and other, that stop by on the street in Manhattan to do this, you know, 10-minute video. He's good. Trackstar.
Okay, I'll check that out. That's funny as hell. Have you ever seen Cartnarks?
No.
There was a guy.
Cartnarks? In like.
Like NARCS. Narcotic agent. There's one man who decided he's going to be the police for putting your grocery cart back in the corral in the parking lot.
Yeah.
And so what he does is when he sees somebody that doesn't put their cart back, he walks up to their car. He's got this silly little hat and like a light up wand, like he's some kind of authority with a vest on. And he's got magnet stickers that say cart violator or something. And he puts the magnet stickers on the cars as they're about to pull out. People then stop their cars. They get out and they're like, what the hell did you put on my car? They start getting irate as fuck. And to the point where there's confrontations, thinking, he's going to get shot to death someday because people lose their minds. And he talks to them in this silly, scolding voice like, come on, lazy bones. You got to put your cart back in the cart bin. Yeah, and they're like, man, there's people to do that. Get the fuck off my car.
I mean, how many nights are you just sitting there
scrolling
and watching these things?
Well, look, it's, and then there's ones like watching guys, seal driveways and time lapse that whole process, or the guys that mow lawns of houses, overgrown stuff because 90-year-old widow in there, and they do it as
you love the precision of that, don't you? Like you want to just
time lapsing. I love anything. Yeah. Normally, a lot of work that can be knocked out on TikTok in no time whatsoever. And my new favorite is something, a category I guess they would call bulldozer rescue. Bulldozer rescue is incredible because a bulldozer dies out in the field on a farm and somebody can't fix it. They just leave it, right? This is a 2-ton hulking piece of rusting metal.
Right. Yeah.
A huge machine. And then some 20 years later, some property owner says, get this off my property. If you want to keep this, bulldozer, if you can make it run, you can keep it. Now, these are $100,000, $200,000 machines. So guys go in and they start saving the bulldozer by first, Kevin, cutting the trees that have grown through parts of the bulldozer that are like this big because it's been 20 years. And then they meticulously go right to the heart of the dozer where the carburetor and the engine is. And they start taking pieces off and they start scraping the rust off and they spray it with WD-40 and they tinker with it and they try to get it started. And they get a lot of time lapses. They finally get the engine of the beast up and running. Now they've got to get the hydraulics working. They got to get the other parts of the thing working. It's incredible that they can actually rescue a bulldozer from a completely dormant state where there's trees growing through it, but it's real.
Who knew that there were lost bulldozers or left behind bulldozers all over the country?
Yes, that's all.
Yeah. Is there one state that has more of them? Is it somewhere in the Midwest?
Probably Nebraska. Who knows? Or them hillbillies, Arkansas. Probably they're the big ones in terms of not doing it.
Foreign country.
All right. Well, look, the Kevin Sheehan podcast available wherever you get your podcasts. Always great to connect with Kevin. It is golf season. You and I have to tee it up and play. How's your game this spring?
Not great. How about yours?
No, it's got some hitches, got some problems, but don't worry.
You got a new club that you're really into?
I don't have a new club. I just have a lot of band-aids on the parts of my game, mostly short game, that are not working right now, but there'll be a new club at some point.
Yeah. How about just the 9 woods and the 7 woods that are just flying off the shelves, right?
I don't have a 7 wood. I probably should have one. They're all the rage. Just got a dumb hybrid, but the hybrid is only just to slap it down just to advance the ball. Just
matriculate it down the field, boys.
Just matriculate the ball. Couple hundred yards.
Just matriculate it down the field. Let's get in wedge territory.
All right. Thanks for the time, Patrick. All right.
Always good to be there.
Let's end on this. Headline. Girlfriend allegedly stabbed boyfriend to death for bringing home food to cook instead of taking her out to eat. Oh no. She is obviously going to stand trial if she does not cop some kind of plea deal. She's really not disputing what she did. She stabbed her husband once in the chest when paramedics were then there administering CPR. She said if they had to lock her up, that was cool. When she was being driven from the apartment to the police station, she was heard making excited utterances and stated she should have just gone to the bar and that the whole thing was irritating. She also said that if her boyfriend's parents didn't hate her before, well, they will surely hate her now. Yeah, they do. The man was rushed to a local hospital where he's pronounced dead from a single stab wound to the chest. I know even though she's admitted it and she seems to be callously indifferent to it, part of me thinks that when this thing goes to trial, there's going to be at least a few people that say, not guilty, Your Honor. You cannot bring food to cook to a woman who's expecting to eat, a woman who is your significant other, who is hangry, You cannot do it. You are indeed risking a very bad outcome if that's the case. Also, she told cops that her boyfriend, quote, began pushing her buttons. And that sparked an argument that led to the fatal stabbing. This was in the village of Lac La Belle, Wisconsin, where I will be in June with the lads to play some golf at the wonderful Lac La Belle Country Club as part of our little Wisconsin weekend of golf. Man, craziness. Michaela Cloth is her name. She's 27, has weird dyed hair. She's kind of got shaved eyebrows, dark, beady eyes, soulless eyes. Yeah, being called a monster by the boyfriend's family. And I can understand that. But if she's like, I'm hungry, I want to go out to eat. And you then bring home, let's see, chicken wings and seasoning. And you were planning on using the air fryer? Hey, bro, as quick as the air fryer might be, guess what? It ain't the same. To a woman, she's got to sit there and go, I got to wait for this food, and we're at home right now. Even though it may be quicker than by the time you get in the car, go to the bar, order the food, get it served to you, it's not about quick. It's about the perception of, I'm here to feed you. Gentlemen, feed your women folk. When they're hungry, they get hangry. When they get hangry, they get nutty. If they get really nutty and really hangry, look out. There's no telling what could happen. Now, you need to search this one up on your own. But some guy took his pregnant wife's texts and ran them through an AI, whatever you call it, model to create a pop song set to her text messages about being uncontrollably hungry and uncomfortable because she's pregnant. Pregnant hangry is even worse. Here's how it goes.
I feel like death. I'm so tired and have a headache. And I think I'm hungry, but I can't eat. I'm dying. My mouth is so gross and my back is killing me. I'm not hungry, but I don't know what to do. I'm sorry to complain to you. I'm just really dying. I'm dying. Trying to sleep, but I'm dying. I can't, no, I can't move. I'm sad you cheated on me in my dream.
That is funny as hell right there. Nauseous. Of course, the boyfriend then took his phone and filmed himself in the car with her reacting in real time for the first time, and she's crying her eyes out. See, that's a healthy, healthy, wonderful, loving relationship. I think you should make it into a full song. We'll bounce out with it. Thanks for listening. Rate and review. Tell a friend and spread the word of the Zabecast. And guys, feed your women folk, okay? Lesson learned. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. The betting calendar is absolutely loaded right now. Baseball in full swing. NBA, NHL playoffs already underway. If you want to get really spicy, you can even bet the WNBA. Look, I'm not judging. Action's action. The question is, where are you betting? Because that matters just as much as what you're betting. That's why I go to mybookie.ag. And why you should too. New to MyBookie? Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. If your first bet loses, you get a full refund up to $500 back in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for showing up. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.